This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with us. We have an interesting topic to talk about, isn't it? It is immunization week from the 24th through the 30th of April. We're a little early. About a week early. But it's something that I think is pressing and we need to talk about, don't you think?
Yeah, before we talk about that, where have you been, Meera?
All over the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I heard that you've been to a place that, you know, our special guest and myself have been before. You went to our university.
I did at last. I mean, what inspiration, right, both of you, for me to actually want to go there to Cambridge University and see exactly what happens there.
She went punting.
It was fun, George. I have to say it's a beautiful place. If anybody has a chance, go see Cambridge. Having said that, I've not been to Oxford, so I cannot say that you shouldn't go to Oxford. I understand the rivalry is pretty bad, isn't it?
Cambridge and Oxford. I don't know. I've been to both sides, so I have no rivalry at all.
And also within the colleges, I was really quite surprised as to how there was so much rivalry between the colleges.
So Asian, isn't it?
It's, you know, talk about kiasuness. I mean, that is kiasuness.
That started 800 years ago. Well, welcome back. You know what a privilege in the last 2-3 weeks we had to talk about Engineer Jolie in your absence. And last week, we had a fantastic time talking about HRT. And today, we have a gynecologist again. So I feel very, very privileged that we have all these high power professionals are helping us to unravel all these mystery of medicine.
Exactly. Professor Dr. Wu Yin Ling, Department of Obstetric and Gynecology, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. In the studio with us, we are discussing HPV, the vaccination. There's a lot in the newspapers or all over the place actually online in regards to HPV vaccines. I think recently the US has spoken about vaccinating boys. We only do that for girls in this country. Well, most countries do, only for girls. Whether or not it's cost-effective to immunize the boys is question number one. Number two, I understand there have been developments as far as the vaccine itself is concerned, where from 3 doses now you need only 2. And three, there was a very interesting development just over the week in Australia where parents could be denied child benefit if they do not immunize their children going forward. It's not going down very well, but I think Australia is going to push ahead with that. I'd like to see how people here would react if we did indeed even consider that, you know. But welcome to the show, Professor
Thank
Wu.
Thank you did very you
have,
much.
Did you have any idea what we're going to do to you today?
No, such short notice.
Okay.
Deliberate because we didn't give you a chance to think. Right?
At all. That's and that always works out for the best. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. I'm sure you have, if you have children who are 12, 13, 14 years of age, you'd have a lot of questions about HPV as well. And
that's
mind
right.
you, we're not just talking about the boys, about the girls. If you have boys and you have questions, give us a call, right? Professor, what is the status of HPV vaccinations in this country? When did we actually start this? How long has it been?
So we started this in Malaysia in 2010. And all Form 1 girls going to school received a free jab. And I think as a Malaysian, I'm very proud of that because we are the first Asian country to have offered a national vaccination program against HPV. Mm. And now we join more than 135 countries globally that offers this vaccination against cervical cancer. And now we are looking at preventing other HPV-related cancers. So that's where the whole discussion and the cost effectiveness of vaccinating male comes in. So it's not just the US, Miriam and George. We've got Canada, we've got Switzerland, Austria, Mexico, Colombia. Mm. These are countries where we've moved on to 2 doses, but are really tackling the issue of vaccinating boys.
Right.
And the UK will soon be discussing that as well.
Right.
But not implemented.
No,
they're still in talks
about
it.
The only country that implements it, presumably, is Australia. Is that right? Or not necessarily?
Canada.
Canada and Australia.
That's right.
Okay. And what are the reservations about vaccinating the boys? Is it everything to do with cost?
Mainly. Because in Australia...
Discrimination, I would like to add.
Towards the woman.
Against the boys, hello. Right, okay.
Okay.
Right, okay. Well, I mean...
Let's not go down there.
Let's go down there, because we're going to start another kind of like a, you know... Well, actually, what are we protecting here? Let's talk about the girls first, right? Okay, I mean, from my understanding is that even in Malaysia, you said it's 2010.
Yeah, so it's only been 5 years.
5 years. So in 5 years, there had been changes, right? Initially, is divalent, is that right?
Bivalent.
Yep. So
what does that mean?
Would you like to explain that?
So we started off using a vaccine that's purely targeting cancer, which is caused by HPV 16 and 18.
Okay.
That's the bivalent, means covering two types. And we moved on 2 years later to the quadrivalent, which covers the wart virus, the common day wart.
Yes.
And also the cancer-causing one, 16 and 18. So that's...
More coverage.
Correct.
Right, okay. I mean, how much protection you're looking at? I mean, so, you know, my daughter had a vaccination. She's 12, and then, you know, she went to private school. However, I insisted that she should actually start in having the vaccination at age of 9. What sort of protection am I looking at for her?
First of all, 70% of cervical cancers are due to HPV 16 and 18. So we do say that even if you're vaccinated, you have to make sure that in the future you do go for your pap smears.
Right.
There are about more than 10 types that would cause cancer, but the common ones, 70% of them would be due to 16.
Which is not bad. I mean, second old cancer protecting vaccine for a girl, that actually is pretty good.
And it's a very aggressive virus, am I correct?
It is aggressive for some. So we shouldn't... It is a very common virus. So if you take a general population, at some point in a woman's lifetime, there would be a 50% chance of having had an HPV infection. Mm. And they clear it themselves.
Right.
So if your immune system is robust, it would clear it itself without any antibiotics or any intervention whatsoever. So that's an important take-home message, just in case everyone gets scared.
I apologize. So just one thing. HPV is a virus.
It is a virus.
So how do antibiotics help?
There are no antibiotics.
Okay.
There are no antibiotics.
So the system fixes itself.
Fixes itself.
Okay.
But in a small proportion of women, they won't have the ability to clear the virus, and therefore they develop persistent virus in their cervix. And that can lead to precancerous change in the cervix, and eventually over a period of a decade, it then becomes cancer.
Mm.
So we're talking about a small proportion of women who are infected with these oncogenic viruses,
right,
who aren't able to clear the virus.
Right, okay. So essentially, the current vaccination regime will protect 70% of cervical cancer, and then so pap smear is still important.
Yes.
However, these cancerous changes essentially is just infection that induces that.
Correct.
What other cancers are you protecting our children from with this vaccination?
That's a very good question.
Well, we always think it's just the cervix.
That's right.
That you're protecting, yeah. But it goes beyond.
So that's what it's
Michael Douglas, is it?
Yes.
He comes to mind. Yes.
So let's pick up on that point then, Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas had oropharyngeal cancer. And so in men and women, both oral cancer and oral pharyngeal cancer are on the rise.
Right.
Now, in the past, it would have been associated with heavy smoking and alcohol.
Yeah.
And now we actually see a trend that oropharyngeal cancer is occurring more so in the younger than 60.
Right.
And even in countries where they have cut down or where they have very effective anti-smoking campaigns.
Yeah, so like, you know, Scandinavian countries,
correct,
for example, where they actually see a downward trend of smoking.
Yes.
But yet they see upward rise of the
oropharyngeal. HPV-related.
Wow.
HPV-related.
And when you say oropharyngeal cancer, you're talking
tonsils.
About the throat?
Tonsils. So the throat.
The throat area.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All
so,
right.
So in both men and women, that's on the rise. Although it's not a common cancer, it's the sixth most common cancer in the world when you take oral and oral pharyngeal cancer.
Wow, six. You know, that's quite significant.
So what are you saying? That although smoking numbers are dropping in certain countries, you're seeing a rise,
correct,
in oral pharyngeal cancer, and that is because...
It's linked to oral sex.
And the virus.
Correct.
Right, okay.
And
correct.
The HPV.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So, and it's occurring in a younger group. Yeah. So in the past, it would have been the older population, but now we see a shift. So not only is it increasing, but it's also happening in the younger population.
Naturally, because children are getting sexually active at a younger age.
That's right.
Okay. Mm. And hence the reason for the National Immunization Program.
Yes. Mm.
See, if you don't go out and explain this to people, and, you know, we are somehow so find it so difficult communicating this to people, how will they even understand?
Exactly. So, you know, program like this, obviously, we highlighted the good things first. And, of course, you know, we're going to deal with the anti-vaccination
campaigns.
By, so of course, we need to address those things that concerns of parents because, you know, even my wife started asking, you know, look, there are so many activities, there are so many blogs and people writing about things. Are they real? How much of that is scientifically proven? I really have to look into that to assure my wife that actually there are more protection than actual risk. You know, apart from...
And when you just say that there's more protection than actual risk, you know, then I start to wonder, how do you know? Maybe you're just biased because you're in the system. So how would you, you know, debunk some of those, you know, people's doubts
about that? Hold that thoughts first. We talked about cervical cancer. We talked about oropharyngeal cancer. Just to kind of wrap up, and what other cancers are we protecting
here? I know what you're
getting at.
So because I'm trying to talk about my side, you know,
I'm fighting
for the boys here. Hello.
I forgot, that's why we brought you in.
I know. I need some relevance sometimes.
So, of course, anal cancer is on the
rise. That wasn't what I was thinking.
I know. Penile cancers.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it is a rare cancer, but it is a very debilitating cancer.
It is
cancer.
Very aggressive, isn't it? Yeah.
So these are the cancers. Anal cancer, penile cancers, oral pharyngeal, vaginal, vulval. These are all related to cancer-causing HPV.
Mm. But, I mean, for me, one of the things, even we're not talking about cancer, is incredibly protective against genital warts. And then that is something that I feel that, you know, if there's a vaccine that exists in order to protect my kids from it, I want my kids to have it. Maybe I'm a bit too late to have it.
So it's probably because you see so many cases of genital warts.
Yeah, genital warts, actually, if you look at GP's visit, you actually constitute quite a large visit. It's not just urologists.
It is a very costly thing. It's recurrent. Often, very often, it's recurrent. And actually, if you survey a group of women who actually have genital warts, you ask them, Would you prefer to have an abnormal pap smear or genital warts? They will tell you, I'd rather have an abnormal pap smear than genital warts because it's visible. It affects them, their relationships. Mm-hmm. So it is very, it's a horrible disease.
Yeah, well, because you're reminded every single time when you see your external genitalia that it's covered with warts. And then you have to go back to your GP repeatedly to actually get it treated with either cryotherapy or chemical therapy in order to eliminate it. And it's not curable. And that reason alone is a good reason to protect the next generation from getting such infection.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would think so.
What are you saying? That if you do have a genital wart, in your female, and there's a chance you could pass it on to your child?
Pass it on to
your partner.
Your partner.
Okay. Your partner.
All right.
Yeah.
Because all the children are born without any HPV vaccine. Is that true?
Sorry?
Or the kids. I mean, a child born in the world actually is without sexual contact will have free of HPV vaccine, of HPV infection.
Not very true, okay. Because, you know, respiratory papillomatosis, mm-hmm. in young children where they are vocal cords. So in very, very rare situations where the mother has genital warts and delivers a baby vaginally, not by cesarean section, the aspiration of the fluids during childbirth, they can actually acquire the wart virus. They swallow it.
Okay.
And it's very rare, but these children develop warts on their vocal cords it obstructs their airways. So on average, they need about 7 to 14 surgery as they're growing up to excise these warts. Mm-hmm. So we know that, you know, as babies go through the genital tract, they may acquire it, but they clear it. It doesn't cause disease.
Mm. Okay, so that's a relief.
That's a relief.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I remember about 12, 15 years ago when the vaccine actually was approved. And I was actually interviewing for candidates going to a medical school. And one of the candidates, you know, very, very intelligent girl. And then I asked her, what is the most recent kind of like a scientific breakthrough that you can cite for me? And, you know, most people would just say, you know, penicillin in 1952. And this girl actually said, you know, I think the vaccinations against HPV is probably going to wipe out quite a large number of cancer within a generation. I was very impressed because, you know, clearly this is a condition that affects many, many young ladies with cervical cancer and affects many, many young men. However, I just am very concerned. Why are there such a resistance and scare and concerns about vaccination?
It's always about what the vaccine is all about.
Yeah.
What is the ingredient? Right?
I mean, the other thing I think it's worth bringing up is the success with Australia, because Australia started its vaccination program with the Gardasil back in 2007. And within 5 years, they had a 92% drop in new cases of genital warts.
Wow.
92%.
In 5 years?
Yes. It's data that's published. And not only that, Mira, what happened is they saw the effects of herd immunity. So the men that were not vaccinated, there was also a drop seen in men who had female partners that were vaccinated.
Right.
So in a real life situation, they're now talking about the possibility of eliminating genital warts in Australia.
Fantastic.
Isn't that amazing?
Fantastic. That's right.
You know, well done. But as I said, as George as well said, what are people so, why are they so apprehensive? What is it?
I think people are apprehensive. You know, about vaccination, you see things about children getting too many vaccines and too young, their immune system can't cope with it, it is a conspiracy. But let's talk about the HPV vaccine. It is not made from any live viruses, so it's absolutely safe. You can't catch diseases from it.
Not like like a BCG
the flu,
or
the flu virus.
Yeah, yeah. The flu virus.
So it's made out of protein. So it's very safe, and the what they call the adjuvant, which is the additional compound that's added to it, is used in other vaccines like hepatitis B.
Mm-hmm.
So it's aluminium based, and so there is an aluminium scare. But we know from good studies that there's no worry about aluminium in vaccines causing any issues.
Okay. So, I mean, what are these you know, activists against vaccines? What are their points? What are they pointing out that make we all kind of get a little bit concerned about this?
You know what? If you are concerned, yeah, give us a call. The phone line is open.
Absolutely.
0377.
Yeah. You don't have to be an activist, right?
0377109000. I think it's a perfect platform for you to get your, you know, whatever. What's troubling you about this vaccine?
That's
I'll
right.
be honest, I've got two children. I'm vaccinated. One child, another one is due.
And soon.
Due very soon. No, one child due to get her vaccine
soon. Let's get your concern. Second, you know, my wife...
I think it's the fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. It's a new vaccine. How will this affect them in 10 years, in 20 years? Will we see something, you know, cropping up out of the blue? Oh, this was due to the vaccine which she took when she was 13.
Mm.
And then you don't want to regret anything.
That's
then
right.
You go on and you think, you know, I didn't get vaccinated and I'm fine. But that's me.
Yeah.
Someone like you would know better how it affects the population as a whole.
I have a theory, right? I have a theory that it's because this vaccine is against a sexual nature disease. Therefore, you know, we never heard such huge concerns when it comes to hepatitis B, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hepatitis B is one of the vaccines that controls hepatoma.
That's
which
a
is
a good point, actually.
Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, when you actually had the hepatitis B rolled out for the schools, you know, we just went for it. And then the whole country went for it. The boys, the girls, everyone went for it. Rubella, we had the everything, you know. And then whenever this is a concern, I think because it's sexual in nature to some degree, so what age do you start your kids on it? Actually tells you something about it. That's eliminates some concerns. And also, whenever it is protecting against a sexual related disease, I think people are fearful about that because it's a taboo.
I think it has to do with the Wakefield generation, really.
Partly.
Yeah. That has triggered this, you know, these doubts that, you know, all vaccines are the same and could possibly lead to, you know, so that fear. Andrew Wakefield really created a whole revolution.
Well, on one hand, it gets a lot of us thinking, really.
It does. But then now you see measles outbreak and you see, things coming back, you know, because people have not vaccinated. And is that a human right? Because you're affecting the people. Yeah, you're affecting other people by not getting vaccinated because you're affecting the herd immunity.
Hence, you know, Australia government said, no, you don't get vaccinated, no child benefit.
Okay, so what do? We have no benefits.
Right, that's right. Then we tax you more.
Yeah. Give us a call, 0377109000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodi. It's Friday and the rain's about to come, you know.
Mira, you brought the rain from Paris
again,
and Cambridge.
Once again, George. I mean, you've brought the rain with you. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with us, joined by Professor Dr. Wu Yinling. She's from the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Faculty of Medicine from the University of Malaya. Did I get that right or am I getting it all wrong?
I just wanted to say how well you did that in one breath.
I don't have a choice.
Years of training. Years of training. And that scares many, many professionals.
In one breath.
That's right.
And we're discussing vaccinations, in particular HPV, the human papillomavirus, which is often associated with cervical cancer, but not so anymore. After listening to Professor Wu, it has a lot of links with oral cancers. And, of course, in George's case, penile.
In George's case.
Vaginal cancers. In what George covers. You know, George is here for a good reason.
That's right. In George's case, I thought you were saying something quite personal.
No, never, George. How would I know?
Okay. I hope not. Okay, moving along.
Kenny.
Swiftly.
Kenny, how are you?
Hi, Kenny.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm actually a new parent regarding some vaccination, but I'm not sure whether it is relevant to the topic. I have a newborn child, which is 4 months plus, and I, other than the government vaccination that it comes from the clinic, I actually went over to the public, these are private clinics for these rotavirus vaccination.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but I also get to know that my neighbor, which his son was actually vaccinated on the rotavirus, and he actually got, he caught himself a rotavirus as well.
Okay.
So I'd just like to know, is it really that we need to go for this sort of vaccination?
Okay, thank you very much, Kenny. That's outside of HPV, but I think Professor will be able to just answer that very vaguely. I think he's talking about the effectiveness of vaccines.
Yeah.
I mean, it's never 100%.
Yeah, and I think that there are different vaccines that are not covered by the government, which you are recommended to have. So there are other vaccines like meningococcal vaccine, pneumococcal, the flu vaccines, and they have various age groups. And because I'm a gynecologist, I'm not
probably susceptible groups, really. I mean, of course, sometimes we can go overboard, you know, but most of the time it's advised by a GP will be good.
Yeah, so just get educated,
absolutely,
I suppose.
Yeah.
I do think you should go if you have concerns, and I think this is important. If you have concerns, I think you should go speak to a pediatrician and ask them what and discuss this with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But to put on record, I mean, vaccines are never 100% effective, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And in HPV's case, you were saying it's, what, 70%?
No, it's more than that.
More than that.
Given at the right age group, it's more than 90% effective.
And which is the right age group?
In the young, before they're exposed to the virus.
It's about 9 to 13 in
that's
most
right.
countries, right? You know,
yeah.
That is that's a licensed age, you know, presumably that's an age that you're not exposed yet.
Okay. Eddie, how are you? You have a question?
Hi, I'm actually a GP. I'm just like to ask about, are there any studies done on the efficacy of the vaccine in people who are already sexually active?
Fantastic.
And also, I have a second question before I put down. I just want to find out, I see a lot of homosexual patients now. These people are very, very closet because they are, I don't know, they get a lot of stigmatized treatment.
Yes.
So, is it good to like vaccinate all, like, because I'm a private GP, should I vaccinate like all children in that age group instead of just focusing on the female children?
Another good question. Thank you very much. Those are very good questions.
Those are very good questions. Let's take the first question, which I see quite often. So someone in their 20s, 30s who are not covered by the National Immunization Program, and perhaps they've even had an abnormal smear.
Right.
They said, would I benefit from having the vaccine? Mm-hmm. And there are actually studies to show that they do.
Right. To what extent?
So if you take... So the studies where they enrolled for these more than 18,000 women, there was actually a subgroup of women who already had abnormal pap smears. And when they followed them up, the vaccine did not cure that particular episode of abnormality. Mm-hmm. So once they were treated, the recurrence rate reduced by 50%.
Wow.
And if it's due to HPV 16 and 18, it can reduce by up to 80%.
Right. Wow. So that's fantastic. And 16 and 18 are the ones you're concerned about.
Correct. So there is a benefit. So if the patient can pay in women who have been sexually active or even when they've had an abnormal smear, they do benefit and can benefit from the vaccine.
I guess that can be the first phase of treatment, because in a way vaccination is to protect them from getting the infection, but this is now treatment really, because whenever you give something to prevent them from getting recurrence, in a sense that is treatment.
It is a form of treatment.
That's right.
Yeah. So if they currently have any abnormal disease, you don't vaccinate to treat that current episode, but for future recurrences, it does help. And in Malaysia, for both the vaccines, it is approved up to the age of 45.
Mm. Okay.
Well, I mean, the GP also have a very valid
question.
I've got
a couple more years to go, George. I can't get myself vaccinated.
So it's not too late yet, is it? Well, you can always go in and say, I'm sexually naive. Might get a free jab.
And be in denial of my age.
So you say, I'm 23.
The next group then, the men who have sex with men, they would benefit greatly. I mean, these are the people who would be at risk of getting anal HPV and anal cancers, and also oral pharyngeal cancers. And we have actually the whole reason why actually Australia moved on vaccinating men is to actually give them the right to benefit from the vaccine as well.
Okay, right. So no discrimination.
That's right.
Okay. So, I mean, for men...
So the question Eddie was asking is, should she vaccinate...
She would encourage
vaccination beyond the women or everybody who is within the high-risk group or the age group, or what does she do?
I think the vaccine is very safe. And if we remove the issue of cost here, it is beneficial for boys, for girls, for men, for women, to be vaccinated.
Oh, so everyone, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, coming back to... You highlighted that the vaccine will reduce the recurrence rate for abnormal pap smear in women. What about reduction of recurrence of wart in men, for example?
Ah, that's an interesting one. So we don't have any studies for that, but we have anecdotal reports and small little case reports, and this is done by dermatologists and people who treat the recurrent laryngeal papillomatosis. So these patients with recurrent warts, when you vaccinate them, it appears that they would reduce the recurrence rates as well. So there are currently ongoing studies to take that on, including more patients into these studies.
Okay. Is it... are boys less likely to get HPV?
In fact, they're probably more likely.
More likely. So we know in women, it's very common to get HPV from the age of about 25, in their 20s, when they first become sexually active. And they clear the virus by the time after they're 30 years old. Whereas in men, we know that they continue to acquire it and it persists a bit longer, not necessarily causing disease, but it persists. You can find it in them if you look for them.
Okay. Is it true, in answering Mira's question, actually, there are evidence to suggest that boys or men who are more promiscuous have more chance of getting more and more HPV infections?
I think if you
Isn't
look
that
at
vice versa? Doesn't that work both ways?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that... I'm trying to be very careful here. You know, in general, in the society, probably men are more promiscuous than
women. I don't think. We have two women here for once who are coming to say
that's not necessarily
that
true.
That may not be true.
Oh, okay, yes. Right, okay. I like to assume that.
but I think if you look at the demographics, if you take a questionnaire study and you look at there is an association with the number of partners. So with increasing number of partners, there's an increased risk of acquisition of HPV.
Okay, so the number of sexual partners really must take that into consideration.
Correct.
I've always wondered, why vaccinate the women and not just the men?
Yeah, so if we look at cost-effective analysis, if you vaccinate the men, it would actually bring some benefit to the women as well. So let's look at the young boys and girls. Right now, most of the programs is about cervical cancer. We're looking at the cost, and we want to achieve an 80% coverage in these girls. And we think that if we cover 80%, we're doing very well. However, if you do not get that high coverage, then you have to start thinking of including the boys to protect the girls. We're not just thinking about preventing male cancers. We're thinking about
protecting the girls
as well. What? So by vaccinating the boys, you're actually protecting the girls as well.
This is just like relive the situation with rubella, isn't
That's
it?
Right.
Like, because presumably rubella in the old days is that we always thought about rubella had to be for the girls and then you don't give the boys. And then the girls continue to get into problems until when the boys are also protected, then you only can eliminate the disease.
Okay. And when it comes to the vaccine itself, do we know the coverage, HPV coverage in Malaysia?
I think we have more than a 90% coverage based on the Ministry of Health data that was published. The ones that I've seen is from 2012. So we have very good coverage for school-going children.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting because you're just taking statistics from government schools because I think in private international schools you have that option whether or not.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what would the parents, Australians decide not to withdraw the kind of like, the child benefit?
No, they've got something called the no jab, no play
plan. That's right, because I just came back from Australia. They have huge uproar about this. And any human rights, people take to the streets. I mean, what do we do to parents who opt out of this? Can they opt out in, let's say, government hospitals and not government schools?
Our parents can opt out, but the uptake has been very good. And if you ask them if they were any, we've done a survey actually looking at this, and parents are actually quite good in Malaysia. So if it's advisable, we would, if it's given as part of a school program, we would take it up just like the BCG.
Right.
Yeah. So are you saying that, okay, if it's over 90%, that's a very good rate actually.
Yeah.
And so we're doing okay.
We're doing okay and we must keep doing okay.
Yeah.
And that's for school going children. So we need to think about, do we have a population that don't go to school? Those are marginalised.
Yep. But then that's 90% of school-going children, fair enough. But then with these 90% already being vaccinated, does that not mean that the coverage is extended to more than that because of herd immunity?
That the boys should benefit. Theoretically, yes. if we have the data to show it, then we, if we have good registries to look at disease that we can measure the success, then it'll be very good.
We have a question here as to how costly is it to vaccinate?
It varies. Of course, within the government NIP, that's at a cost price. But I think if you go out in a private hospital, it works out to be about 200 ringgit per jab.
Okay, 200 per jab. And now, okay, it used to be 3 jabs, Professor Wu. I remember my daughter taking 3.
Okay.
I understand now it's down to 2. We'll come back and discuss that up next. If you have a question for our doctors, we're discussing the HPV vaccine. A lot has been said. What do you think, should parents be penalized for not immunizing their children? And we're not just talking about the HPV, we're talking about all vaccines, part of the National Immunization Program, which Australia has actually done. I mean, what are your thoughts? Give us a call, 0377 109 000, tweet BFM Radio or text 0162 019 000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodi. In the studio with me, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, together with Professor Dr. Wu Yin Ling from the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology from the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. We're discussing HPV, the human papillomavirus vaccine, which has been hitting the headlines. I think this debate has been going on for quite a long time. It's just that Australia made that, broke the news about this whole child benefit thing, and I think it got all of us thinking, you know, again about HPV and immunization, and it is immunization month, I think, month of April. So there's a lot of discussion going on. But what did you think? I mean, do you think that parents should be held accountable for not vaccinating their children?
I think parents can make decision for their own children, but when that decision affects other children, then we as guardian of our population need to take some sort of action to protect the greater population. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we saw what happened in Disneyland where the measles broke out. Yeah. And I mean, so, and in Australia, we've seen cases such as that as well, where there's been measles that have affected children. And so I think it's right to take some sort of an action. I don't know whether it should have been that drastic, but to take some sort of an action to protect the greater good.
Okay. And George, your thoughts?
Well, I think it is good enough. I think it's drastic, but it's drastic enough to just use financial way to deter, to entice you. You know, if you go for it, then it's part of the child benefit. And it's appropriate because part of the child benefit actually is help you to look after the kids. If you feel like you don't want to do that, you want to opt out, and then you may lose up to $15,000 Australian, you know, in child benefit. And I think... you still give enough room for parents who feel very strongly. So, you know, of course, some people may pro-choice for their own kids, and you can do that. And I think that will give a lot of people a lot of you have to think twice before you simply say, I don't want to do it because I don't feel like it.
Yeah. I mean, there are various arguments. I mean, some of the kids could get punished because of the position their parents make as a result of the decision. The policy won't catch parents who don't need the benefits, and that could lead to children being excluded because you don't need the benefits, so what do I care?
Right.
I'm opting not to.
Yeah.
It's not fair to taxpayers to subsidize parents who choose not to immunize.
This drastic step, as I understand it, is just targeted at 2% of the parents, the really strong anti-vaccine parents. And they predict that by implementing this, you will still get that 1% who don't need the child benefit.
Yeah.
And it may not be that effective, so we'll just have to wait.
But does that
happens.
Make a difference? Does it make a difference at all?
I don't know.
Well, the 2%, you know, if you continue to get somebody in out of the 2% populations who
get
have
outbreak.
The infection, yeah, you can potentially, because the whole idea of this is to eliminate the disease.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah? Okay.
And what about the whole moving from 3 dose to 2 dose? Is that...
because we evolved.
Has that been proven?
Yeah.
You know, why from 3 doses
now? Should parents be worried?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, suddenly, you know, I injected 3. It's like, why
Correct.
Did it do that?
Right.
And then will the 2 dose be more compromised? Let's talk about that.
There's so much confusion around this issue. First of all, I have to qualify this. The 2 dose is really just for the children, the adolescent, 9 to 15 years old. So for all those who've been vaccinated, if they're above 15, you stay with the 3 dose, purely because the immune system is more robust.
Right.
If you're younger.
Okay.
So what happened was, when they were carrying out all these safety studies and looking at antibody titers, they noticed that the 9 to 13-year-olds who had only 2 doses...
already achieved,
achieved similar antibody levels as someone who was 16 to 25 receiving 3 doses.
Thank you for that, because I was reading one article, and with 1 dose it said you would get a coverage of about 70 to 80% just with one. So is that very much
relation
to the age? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the age is very important. So 9 years old is when it's licensed for, and it's not just looking at the antibody levels. What you want to get are your immune system. You want to train your immune system to recognize the challenge again if it's exposed to the virus again. So yes, with one dose, you get a superb amount of antibody response, but that falls. And if you don't get your second dose, means you don't educate the immune system to recognize that challenge in the future. So really, you want to have two doses, and there are ongoing sort of biological studies looking at one dose if they're very young.
Right.
So Mira is right here.
Oh, so one dose.
But
we're working on it.
So we need to be clear. Yes, two dose, and WHO has recommended that, and it's come out in their statement. So their scientific experts met and came up with a statement last October to say that two dose in the 9 to 15 year olds would be effective and acceptable, but you have to keep a close eye to see what happens 10 to 20 years
right
down the line.
Has that come to Malaysia yet?
Two doses?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
So this year in January, the government has rolled out the two-dose vaccination among the 13-year-olds.
Will that also be less costly?
Yes.
Or naturally, because one dose less. Yeah.
So there are lots of logistics reasons, not just in Malaysia, for many other countries. Logistically, it makes more sense. You get more coverage, more compliance when it's two doses rather than three.
Of course. You tend to forget some doses.
Yeah, the other thing that I would like to kind of sip in, because the time is running out quite quickly, and I'm saying, because I've got two more really pressing questions. And the most important things people ask me is, like, you know, I've got this protection, and then for hepatitis B, I have to have booster every 5 years. What are we talking about here when it comes to HPV vaccine?
So HPV vaccine is a relatively young vaccine, and we know that it is effective up to 10 years. But if you look at sort of mathematical modelling based on the hepatitis B, we think that it may last as long as 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget, you know, if you're continually exposed to the virus through sexual contact, that may be a sort of a mini immunisation each time.
Okay. You keep reminding your body that you need to defend.
We are not saying.
So, go out there, have fun. Right?
No.
To keep yourself immunized.
All right.
So 10 years. It's effective. It's safe. So there are rumours going around that you get Guillain-Barré syndrome, multiple sclerosis. We've now got very good data that it's very safe and it's not associated with an increased risk of such neurological problems.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Your other question?
My other question is that, you know, one of the easiest things that you guys, gynecologists, are doing to us is that, you know, if you have a woman who has got an abnormal pap smear, and then you say to them, I think your husband need to see a urologist to get this sorted out because you got this from your husband. And they turn up to my clinic and actually say, my wife's gynecologist accused me of doing things, but I haven't done anything.
That's so terrible. You know, I love this. The both of you fight it out.
That's right. And it's like, you know, here's me trying to say, well, I've got this problem is that I can't diagnose whether you've done it or you haven't done it. You know what you should say? I know nothing. because at the end of the day, we can't tell, right?
So on a serious note, on a more serious note,
so absolutely. There's no screening.
There's no screening for anal, for penile, for oral pharyngeal, for oral cancer. Even for vaginal and vulval cancers, you can look, but there's no screening methods, only the cervix.
So why is that the case, and how do we do research work when there's no screening? How do we do that?
I mean, we can screen for the infection, but not the disease, but it is a very laborious and expensive way of doing it.
So it's more in a research manner, and then there's no diagnostic tool that is approved in order to do that.
But is it okay to assume then that you got it from your partner?
Well, see, earlier on, we had a statement saying that do not assume men are more promiscuous.
No, if you don't have a screening process, then what do you do?
That's right. That's to the boys. I just say to the boys that I can't prove whether you've done it or you haven't done it. So you just have to say you know nothing.
Likewise, we don't know whether the male got it from the female.
That's true.
It's true.
So we know that in a couple, in a monogamous couple, they actually share the same HPV type if you do research and looking at the different. So we cannot always blame one person. It takes two.
Of course.
Right,
of
okay. Course. So how do I tell these poor men who turn up to my clinic and say, did I do this to my wife?
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one because I kind of say, I don't know. I think you ought to go back to the gynecologist and ask that.
I think we don't know enough. I mean, we've already shown that, you know, a child can acquire it as they go
and we
may be able to keep the infection controlled throughout our life, and it's a latent infection.
It is true. And then also there are studies to say that even first time contact, you know, of skin to skin contact itself may actually transmit the virus itself.
So it's a very common virus. So
let's not blame try and prevent it as much as we can.
Oh,
right?
Mira, I love it when you say something like that.
No, because this is not going to go anywhere, right?
It isn't. But the thing is that, you know, they also get very worried, because whenever a cervical cancer, obviously abnormal pap smear is diagnosed, and then they also concern about themselves at whether this will change into a penile cancer or anything like that. And then they want to know. And the unfair thing is that it's only cervical cancer that we can make the diagnosis.
And very quickly, there's one very pertinent question here. Why not vaccinate women over 45?
Oh, it takes so long for them to develop cancer, and the immune system as well is not very robust after the age of 45. So the benefits of the vaccine would be much reduced. So it's actually better to have the pap smears done.
Rather than get yourself vaccinated.
In a utopia where you would just want to vaccine everyone, really.
Of course, but you know, I'm going to hold on to Professor Wu's statistic on Australia and how they have managed to bring down, the incidence of genital warts. By how much?
92%
just by vaccination.
To translate that to a GP visit, I can tell you it's phenomenally high. I mean, as a urologist, to deal with genital warts, you know, we see it on a daily basis, and then they come back repeatedly. And then if you have a vaccine that can eliminate this, it will save healthcare a lot of money.
Okay,
a lot of money
and a lot of, I suppose, discomfort as well.
Well, yes.
Your message, Professor Wu, on HPV vaccinations.
I think that...
What do you see going on for it in the future?
I think HPV matters to everyone. It's not something that's just limited to the female. I think if we are able to, we should be vaccinating our boys, our girls, and hopefully cervical cancer and all the other cancers would be something of the past.
So just within a generation, just to get rid of that.
Yeah. And the HPV vaccine itself, do you see any developments coming through? I mean, we've got two doses now. Anything else that could be, you know, more
Yeah, from bivalent,
optimistic.
We went to quadrivalent, we got two doses. It's all evolving,
it
isn't
is,
it?
It is,
which is
indeed.
A nice thing, because I think, you know, one of the... things that has created is obviously with a lot of anti-vaccine campaigns and things like that, but that brings the whole discussion into the limelight, and that is important, because the true good debate can generate interest, can generate discussion, and that can generate research and understanding about the disease. Mm-hmm. So what's in the new kind of like horizon?
So this is like someone asking me, when is the next iPhone coming out?
You need to wear a collar neck first, a dark, you know, kind of polo neck shirt or something.
So around the corner, we have the nanovalent, the Gardasil 9, that's been approved in America and in Europe. The FDA has approved it. They've completed the clinical trials.
What does that mean?
So it protects against 9 types of human papillomavirus.
And how many are there in total?
More than 100 types,
okay.
But there are 40 types that affect the genital tract.
So iPhone 9 now? It's like, yes. Okay. So, I mean, what sort of like protection are we talking about? From 70, what sort of additional protection?
More than 90.
Really?
So the whole idea is that whether or not you can actually eliminate the need to have a pap smear.
Mm, yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah, excellent.
Fantastic.
And, you know, our future generation, come on, people, go get them vaccinated, really.
That's right.
There shouldn't be a doubt at all. Your message, George?
Well, my message is that I'm now going to get vaccinated myself.
It's a bit late, George.
She said it's not too late. It's not too late, right?
It's not too late.
Never too late.
It's never too late.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, together with Professor Dr. Wu Yin Ling from the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, discussing the human papillomavirus vaccine on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.